Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators, part of the Stadium and Gale Network, and presented by our partner, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida. They are a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. You can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance of business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust, and estate planning. Well, happy Wednesday, everybody. Start of the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament. For, I think, eight teams today. Fortunately, the Gators are not one of them. How's everyone doing?
Doing great.
Doing great.
That time of the year. Ready to watch some ball.
Four months of coaching.
I had the Kentucky game on in the corner at work today, and it was fun for the first 30 minutes of gameplay. And then Kentucky kind of took over.
Denzel Aberdeen with some interesting behavior on the court. He got teed up at one point for some jawing at a guy. I think he had a tongue out standing over a dude as he ran down the court.
He did. The Kentucky Wildcats are playing on the Wednesday of the SEC tournament for the first time in school history. And it's just crazy to see how Denzel has fallen off. He used to be a guy that embodied the championship culture that we had here at the University of Florida under Coach Todd Golden. And he gets with Mark Pope for, I don't know what, it's coming up on a full year now. And he's out there taunting guys and just celebrating being mediocre.
There's different standards at that Kentucky program versus at the University of Florida.
Yeah.
I think I sent a text message to the group chat saying how bad Auburn is when it was 60-57 with like 3.5 minutes left, and Auburn immediately ended the game on a 17-4 run. So it's March for everybody.
Who do they play tomorrow, or I guess Friday once this drops?
Tennessee, I believe.
Tennessee.
Yeah. Let me pull out my bracket.
Yeah, how many billable hours have you recorded in the last 2 days between filling out brackets and watching every single conference tournament game, it feels like?
Find you a guy that can do both.
Everyone wave to Will's employers that watch the show.
Auburn plays Tennessee tomorrow, 25 minutes after Kentucky plays Missouri.
Is that the 1 o'clock tip, Kentucky-Missouri?
12:30. They bumped it up 30 minutes from their typical time.
Well, it's interesting. This is always a weird part of the year. It's like on the verge of being the most exciting for college basketball. But for us folks that live in Jacksonville or grew up in Jacksonville, you've also got the Players Championship here in town. So it's kind of hard to balance both, especially most of us, the three of us outside of Hunter, will be there this weekend. So it's kind of a tough time to watch a lot of hoops while simultaneously being out at Sawgrass.
We used to not really have to worry about it.
This won't be the first time that I'm sitting on the hill on 17 and maybe doze off a little bit while the SEC championships or the SEC semifinals are on my phone on a Saturday at TPC. So fun days ahead.
Yeah. I mean, we used to not make it, but I am hoping they put TPC back in May so that we can go to the SEC tournament and maybe do a live show there or something, you know, with our millions of viewers.
A press conference dropped today about the PGA Tour. They've got a lot of changes coming for next year or the years following. So we might just get that wish. Some interesting conversations today out at the tour headquarters. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We've got Neil Blackman joining us here momentarily, talking SEC tournament hoops, Gators seeding in the NCAA tournament. Kind of feels like we've solidified that one seed. What are your guys' thoughts before he jumps on, depending how this weekend goes in Nashville?
I would like to ask Devin whether he still wants us to lose a game before the tournament.
I never said that. Never said that.
There was just a little bit of gutless grifting going on a couple weeks ago.
The comment that was made was that I worry about heavy legs this time of year. And I think that that's still a fair concern. I think a lot of these guys played deep into last season. A lot of these contributors, they played 40 games last year. And the further into March you get, the more that those heavy legs start to You know, they played more basketball than anybody over the last 365 days. So
you're starting to sound like Mike Pope a little bit.
The comment was that it wouldn't break my heart now that we're sitting in 2 days away from starting and playing in Nashville. Yeah, absolutely. I want to win. I want to. Either way, Friday afternoon is going to be a blast. You either get to avenge the Missouri game from January, or you get to slap around Kentucky for the third time. Either way, I'll sign me up for that. And then you get who would it be? The winner of the Vanderbilt Auburn Tennessee trio.
Yep.
Which sign me up for any of those games. You either avenge Auburn, you get to slap around Tennessee again, or, you know, probably or not probably the best test we got in SEC play on the road was against Vanderbilt. So that's another challenge that, you know, will serve us well. So, yeah, I rescind the comments. There were material changes. That was 2 weeks ago. Let's go win a championship. And let's all pull from the same end of the rope, by the way. This is gotcha culture at its finest.
Hey, I can't pour from a glass house. I've had plenty of takes that have not, matured very well. They have not aged like fine wine in as short as 2 weeks' time. So I'm right there with you.
A guy like you, Will? What are you talking about? One of the best returning guards in the SEC is playing on Wednesday for a school, the first time in program history.
Getting technical fouls with 4 minutes left against the 16th seeded team in the conference.
Well, as you pointed out with, you know, your thought process going into the SEC tournament, there was a major material change, and he left Todd Golden's coaching, left his mentorship, just his leadership, everything that Coach Todd Golden brings to the table, and went to go play for that bum and Mark Pope. And now he's, you know, taunting guys, being happy with being mediocre.
What you just did, Will, was actually genius. You just perfected your take from the offseason to basically say – he's one of the best returning guards if he's coached by Todd Golden. So if he goes elsewhere, there's no way to prove you're wrong.
There was an implied condition in that entire Twitter crash out, and it was premised on the fact that if he had not gone to play for Mark Pope and had chosen to return and stay with Todd Golden. But that's neither here nor there. You know, like Devin said, we got to focus on pulling all in the same direction and winning a championship. So who would you guys rather play? Missouri or Kentucky?
I'd rather beat Kentucky for a third time, but I'd like to get another revenge game against Missouri. We did it last year in the SEC tournament after we lost in January. I'd like part two of that occurring as well.
Yeah, I mean, you hate to say it doesn't matter, but it doesn't matter. I'd line it up and – I like our guys over anybody. So I do like the idea of avenging losses. So, you know, Missouri, they sniped us opening night of SEC play. So getting the chance to get them again. I think we've seen we're a better basketball team than Kentucky this year. And I don't want to have any sort of taste in my mouth that that changes that, any sort of fluky, you know, third matchup. It's tough to beat a team three times, but this team's so much better than Kentucky.
And Mark Mitchell will give us a pretty good test before we go into March as well. We've kind of dominated everybody in the low post. He had our number first game of the conference opener, so I think it'd be good for our guys to kind of get, you know, beat him one time.
Yeah, I'm with you. You mentioned it, Jackson. Last year we had a chance to avenge some losses. So I'm in favor of that. You know, like you said, anytime you get a chance to beat Kentucky, that's fun. But it'd be cool to avenge the Missouri loss, and then the next round potentially. Auburn would have to go on a little bit of a SEC Cinderella run to get them. But, you know, you have a chance to avenge both losses potentially, depending on how it falls. So it could be fun.
Yeah, well, let's bring in Neil Blackman, who joins us. How you doing, Neil?
Well, while we're waiting on Neil to figure it out, so on the other end of the bracket, the top two seeds are Arkansas and Alabama. Who would you rather beat twice this season to win the SEC tournament?
Bama. Give me Bama. Give me Nate Oates and Bama. Come on, we already
Little Nate Oates.
Little Nate Oates.
Little Nate Oates. That's what they,
I mean, imagine what Condon would do to them without Charles Bediako.
Yeah.
That could get – it could be bad for Little Nate Oates.
I'd rather play Arkansas.
Well, that's because you got the family out there and everything. We don't want to hear that. We want to beat the crap out of Nate Oates.
Yeah, well, let's get Tommy versus Acuff going again. Round two. Yeah.
I mean, I guess, but they one, they don't really match up like that. And two, the SEC player of the year has already been wrapped up. And, you know, we're not about – we've never been about individual awards in the less than 1 year history of this podcast. We've always been team guys.
I want to say that I threw out a take coming into basketball season that Herb Clavijar would lead the conference in three-point shooting percentage. I don't think that he ended up leading the conference in three-point percentage, but he was named the sixth man of the year. So credit to me for that.
Let's see if we can get Neil back on the program. Still having some technical difficulties. But, to your point, I think he was trying to pull up that stat there, Dave, but I cannot find it. All right, I kicked Neil. It's given some bad echo. Is anybody else having that problem or just me?
Yeah, we can all hear the echo.
It's gone now.
Well, yeah, I kicked him.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, we might not have Neil join the show tonight.
Let me paint a picture for you guys real quick, because you're talking about the bottom of that bracket, and I have it up here. We're looking in that double bye section, and we're talking who would you rather face, Alabama or Arkansas. Could you imagine a world where the 7-seed Georgia Bulldogs find their way in the championship and we get a Mike White, Todd Golden SEC championship? How fun would that be?
I can't imagine the world. Mike White team's playing consistently enough for, what would it be, 4 days in a row, 3 days in a row to get to Sunday? That ain't going to happen.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I don't think anybody ever really realized it, because I kind of got so accustomed to him not having success in the SEC tournament. But we were – like, you have the shot that Nembhard hit in the game against LSU. But I think, like, only 1 year we had gotten the double bye. We got the 3-seed, and we got beat. We got smoked by 6-seed Arkansas. And we didn't even come close to reaching the SEC semis ever under him, which kind of takes us back to what we were talking about with TPC, is, like, we never, ever had to, you know, multitask there on 17, and all of a sudden we're like, wait a minute, this is going to be a big problem.
Yes.
Yeah,
so it was got a 6-footer for the lead on like 13, and you know, Walter Clayton sent a step back three against Texas A&M last year.
I was going to say, I think it was 2 years ago, the Texas A&M comeback that got us into the championship game against Auburn, where Handlocked and hurt his leg, and we know how that game ended up going. That's the game that I remember sitting on the hill on 17 watching from the cell phone. You know, we're down, I want to say came back from down 17 in that game.
Yeah, 17, yep. 18 points.
Run what led by won. Denzel Aberdeen.
He's got history in Nashville.
But that was really cool. That's an underrated part of the TPC and the SEC tournament going on at the same time, is there are so many Gators there, and there's also a lot of Georgia Bulldogs. And when the Gators are good at basketball, you just see so many – you finally see so many Gator logos out there. You're waiting in line for bathroom or Sawgrass Splashes or whatever, and everybody's giving go Gators, you know, talking about the basketball team and stuff the last couple of years. So that's been fun. And it's nice that the Georgia fans can't join in and they want to talk about football, and nobody's interested in football at the time.
It is unfortunate. We have only one Gator in the field this week. No Billy Ho, the Ponte Vedra native. Ricky Castillo, shout out him. He just won on the Puerto Rico Open, which many of you could not hear on our last show, thanks to my audio in rural Tennessee. But he will be I think he's had a morning, afternoon wave tee time, so hopefully he makes the weekend part of that 2023 national championship team. So it'll be nice to see Ricky make the cut. Follow him around a few holes on Saturday.
Speaking of the Sunday episode, shout out to you guys for holding it down. Shout out to Jake and his beautiful bride. Fun time on Sunday. And it's a great way to kick off the spring, to get from that straight into SEC tournament, the players and the Gators going back to defend their crown.
Neil, how's it going, man?
Let's see. Our audio sounds better this time when he logged in.
Yeah, no echoes. I don't have him muted.
He's muted, if you can hear us, Neil.
No, I muted myself. I'm sorry about that, guys.
Here we go.
What's
up? I don't know what happened.
All good.
How's it going, guys?
Quick intro for the folks that haven't listened before. Neil Blackman hosts the Florida Basketball Hour, writer for Saturday Down South, and an author of a brand new book that's supposed to come out soon. If you want to touch on the book real quick before we get going.
Yeah, looks like, I mean, now it was a story of the 2024-25 national champions, the underdog legacy. And it was originally going to publish in March, and I was asked to write a epilogue basically about the 25-26 season and like the challenge of repeating and the pressure of trying to repeat, and the challenge of a new team. And now it seems like whoever decided I needed an epilogue made a good call, because it's becoming quite a 2-year story.
What's going to happen when we go back to back and we try to defend our third straight title? You're going to have to write another book.
I'm just going to – I told him this is it. Two seasons, that's all you get. That's kind of the standard. Like John Feinstein wrote Season on the Brink, 40 years ago. And he did two seasons, even though it's called Season on the Brink, and that's it. That's all you get. There's no third season.
What a good problem to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. I know a few of us, we got some big questions with SEC tournament starting. Selection Sunday finally is here. It just feels like it's – back in November, it takes so long to get this moment here to finally defend our title. What's kind of your outlook on the SEC tournament, that one seed line that we've kind of been really just gotten to the conversation about in the last week and a half, 2 weeks? How do you see the Gators, did they solidify that last Saturday, the win at Rupp, or do they need to win one or two games in Nashville?
I think they got to win Friday. I think everybody in the basketball building feels that way too, even if they aren't saying so out loud. I think UConn really isn't going to play a terribly challenging game at the Big East tournament until, the semifinal at best. And even if UConn wins the Big East tournament, I think Florida now is in the position to hold on to the one seed, but they can't go home on Friday. I'm not convinced, especially after last year. Remember, because last year, now, I think most people felt like Florida had sealed a one after the Saturday win over Alabama last year, but there were still people who were kind of like, oh, well, the winner of Florida-Tennessee gets the final one, and it's not that this year. Florida's so far ahead in quad one wins and predictive metrics. The one place that they can get caught by UConn is this wins above bubble metric, which has only been used – this is the second year of it, so – we don't have a ton of data that that's what the committee relies on, but last year it was, right? That was the most close to the actual seedings. So Florida needs to beat either Kentucky or Missouri on Friday. And then I think they're good. Again, I'm not sure how much the committee even watches games come Saturday afternoon. I think most things are seeded out.
I think everybody agrees with that except for Seth Davis. He insists that they watch over and over again. But that year that Texas A&M went all the way to the finals and still got left out, I think ruined that argument forever.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, God bless Seth. He's a great ambassador for the sport. But
Neil, before you jumped on, we were kind of talking about the path that we would be as fans most excited to see Florida go through, whether it's avenging the loss to Missouri or getting to whip up on Kentucky for a third time. What path through the SEC tournament do you think best prepares this team for the big tournament next week and in the next 3 weeks after this?
Hey, that's a great question. I hadn't thought about it like that. So Kentucky has they've got Cam Williams back today. He played about 17 minutes. And he really does improve them defensively to where I kind of wonder a little bit if maybe a third game against them when they have him available is the best thing. I don't know what's going on with the light there. And anyway, you know, Missouri on the flip side, they're kind of the classic eight seed that Florida could see in the second round. In that, like, there are some eight seeds that have some at least bodies in the front court. And so, like, Florida, you know, we saw the first game. You know, what happens with the Gators usually is by minute 30, they start to really wear on you and teams run out of gas. Obviously, the Kentucky games have been a little different in that Kentucky's made these furious charges. But, you know, Florida can't really wear Missouri out. Because Missouri plays 10 and because they have four front court bodies. None of those guys are as good as Florida's. Mark Mitchell's really good, but it's plenty of dudes. And so I kind of want to see that game again, honestly. Like, I think both could prepare Florida, but I like the idea of a front court that can punch back. And certainly Missouri is more that than Kentucky is.
I also think that it probably helps us for March. Like, I think it benefited the team psychologically to get to play Missouri again last tournament, just to kind of, you know, like, they had something to play for immediately. It wasn't just kind of rest on your laurels, go there and avenge your loss. And then they got Alabama, and that's been a little chippy. There's been kind of some, you know, chirping back and forth. I guess there wasn't really last year, but it's still, they did get chippy with I believe was it Wag who got sort of tied up with Condon, or maybe that was even 2 years ago, but yeah, whatever happened in that moment, Condon has not forgotten it and has taken it out on them every single time. And so it's like, you know, we show up to play those guys, but I go back and forth a little, but I do think that it could help some psychologic, you know, get up to avenge your loss kind of deal.
Yeah. I mean, I think the good news is, like, this staff and this team will have no issue being motivated to beat their rival a third time. So I think either way you kind of get that. And another benefit of Kentucky is, you know, I think a lot of their fans might be arriving Friday because none of them expected to play Wednesday. And so you get that kind of, like, let's say Houston's in Florida's region, you know, and Florida has to play Houston in the Elite Eight. I was kind of joking with one of the staff members this week, and I said, you know, how do you feel about maybe a road game against Houston if you guys get to the Elite Eight? And he goes, about the same way I felt about playing them in the national title game in San Antonio. He goes, it'd be really nice if we could play that Orlando once, you know. But, yeah, Kentucky, anytime you play Kentucky in the SEC tournament, it's a road game. So that's another kind of mental test too.
What's the explanation for that, Neil? Why is it that, you know, for – a week and a half, Florida was the five, UConn was the four. We jump up to four, and then all of a sudden we're matched up in the South region with the six overall seed Houston. According to Lenardi, obviously it's not official, but why is it that switch was made?
So the one seeds get geographical preference. So, like, you take geographical preference, and then the other big issue is that if you've played somebody twice, then you can't play them a third time until it's the Elite Eight, I believe. So either way, the way that ends up bumping the math is that, you know, Florida kind of is locked in to someone from the Big 12 being there too. Now, could that be Iowa State? Yeah, I mean, there's still plenty of things that could happen. Iowa State won today. and I think is still kind of playing for that too. But, and the committee might not do it to Florida. They may ship Houston off elsewhere, but in order to protect sort of Michigan with that third game against a conference foe kind of rule, the way it all breaks out is like, there's only a couple places to put Houston, and one of them ends up being where they get to play in the Elite Eight, basically at home. You know, Kelvin Sampson was joking about it this week, though. He's like, well, we had to play Purdue in Indianapolis last year in the Elite Eight. So it works out, you know.
Neil, moving from bracket talk to how this Florida team is playing right now, I remember you talked in the non-conference games how they were losing the mini games within the game. Is it fair to say with how they've been playing down the stretch here, they've been winning a lot more of those mini games?
Yeah, they're they not only are they winning the mini games, but like the efficiency margins are crazy. And it's something else we talked about. Like they, you know, they got out of that stretch where they were 5-4 and they went into those bye games, and sort of the mission critical job in the bye games was figure out who the eighth man is. And remember, they left those bye games and none of us really knew, including the staff, who the eighth man was. It was kind of like, oh no, do we panic now? And they went to Missouri and promptly lost because they didn't have an eighth guy they could trust. And then very quickly after that, it became Isaiah Brown. And since it's become Isaiah Brown, really since December 13th, Florida's second in Bartorvik, but since after the Missouri loss, they're second in Bartorvik, and they're behind by 0.01 on Duke. So basically they're the same from an efficiency standpoint as Duke is. And there isn't – I did this research yesterday. There isn't a single four-minute segment of basketball that Florida has lost since February 1st. So they've been better in every media segment since February 1st than every opponent. And that obviously includes – the one half that they've actually lost in the last month, which was the second half at Rupp. Wow. And the first half at Kentucky, or first half at Texas, second half at Rupp. Two halves in 1 month.
We've definitely been banging the drum for Zay Brown. Hunter actually nicknamed him Baseline Brown because the guy's been a killer on the baseline threes and then the pump fake dunks.
Yeah, he's something else. And I feel like when he consistently learns to pump fake, as opposed to like, I feel like sometimes he does it by accident. Like he wants to shoot and then there's a closeout and he's like, all right, whatever, I'll attack the closeout. And I really do think because he can make that three pretty consistently, he's actually Florida's second best 3-point shooter on catch and shoots, shooting about 38.5% on those. And so, you know, I do feel like he gets aggressive closeouts, which is crazy with his athleticism. It's a little Keontae Johnson-like because there's just enough there from the perimeter that you have to really respect it aggressively. And so it's pick your poison, which is what made Keontae so good and effective.
Neil, you talked about Florida's efficiency really since that Missouri loss, but 14th in the league in free throw percentage. We were 20 of 32 against Kentucky. A majority of those, it felt like in the last 8 minutes, we couldn't buy a shot at the free throw line. Is there anything analytically in Todd's report or how they scout their team that might maximize, where they maximize that could cancel out that free throw percentage?
Well, they put Urban Klavzar in the game for the first time. Like, he's played leverage minutes all year. You know, what I mean by that is, like, he's played – when games are tight, his minutes actually tend to trade off kind of favorably with Lee's. But – and Xavion's a pretty good free-throw shooter. But they put Klavzar in the game with Boogie and Lee against Kentucky, which was interesting. Like, they went smaller purposefully because they needed the ability to inbound the ball to Urban. And I think in the NCAA tournament, if there's close games, because we don't know. I mean, maybe they'll UConn second run through it, right? But if they don't, I think Urban's going to be on the floor because he's a 90% free throw shooter, and that's going to be the strategy, is get it to him.
Neil, whenever you were on earlier, we were kind of talking about, you know, the, I guess the mood of the fan base was, do we need to freak out or is this Florida team fine? And so my question to you is, was it really just as simple as Boogie and Xavier making shots, or is this team doing other things? Or is the coaching staff doing other things that have really spurred this team from, okay, this is like a decent 6-7 seed to, oh my goodness, this is a team with a legitimate chance to get a one seed and go back to back?
Yeah, that's a great question. I asked Todd about that after the mistake game. And, you know, he said kind of two things that I thought were super interesting. One he said was, you know, yes, he felt like Florida's guards got more comfortable. And they started taking better shots. They started playing to their strengths, you know. Florida's not a program that takes a ton of mid-range twos, but for Boogie Flan, that's a great shot. And when Boogie sees the first one go in, it's amazing how much more effective he seems than, you know, when he takes a long late shot clock three to start and he's 0 for 1 and then he's 0 for 2. So I think there's a comfort level there. And then Xavier Lee, same way. I think he's looked to drive to score initially, sometimes too much, in my opinion. Like, I think he's had some wide open threes early in games I'd love him to take, and he hasn't. And then the other thing that Todd said is, like, he said, hey, look, it's on me. Like, it took me a little while to figure out how I wanted to play with this group. And I think what he means by that is they play through Alex Condon a lot more than they even did in November and December. I mean, things really, even though Condon's assists have kind of tapered off a little bit in the last 5-6 games, mainly because he's scoring more. You know, there's not many possessions that don't start with a touch for him, either if it's a horn set or it is something at the nail or the elbow, and then they can run things through him or he can make a read. Florida's 1.31 points per possession when Alex Condon starts a possession mid-post isolation. That's preposterously high. And that's why I put Alex on my first team All-SEC. Is like, I don't think the people realize the impact playing through him has had on the team offensively. And funny enough, it's something they figured out in the second half at Duke, right? They go in, they're down double digits. And I think the big impetus was like, how do we get Alex involved? And they said, you know what we should do is let him use his beautiful footwork and move Ngamba away from the rim. And that kind of spurred the Florida comeback. And I think after that, Florida, you know, really made an emphasis of playing through him. He's had some high turnover games as a result, but the way he's played the last five, I mean, I don't know many bigs in the country I'd take over him right now.
Do you mentioned that his assists have kind of tapered off, but does the staff keep track of like hockey assists?
I haven't asked that question. I feel like they probably do. I mean, because that's a great, like, so many possessions start with a Condon touch, mm-hmm. and, you know, end with a basket that's assisted by someone. Yeah, I bet Alex's number is pretty high.
Neil, question for fans, Gator fans specifically, as the bracket reveal show comes on Sunday and they start to reveal Florida's region, when it comes to the teams that fill out the region and teams we could play, what do you look for as style of plays we want to avoid versus styles of play you may want to see Florida play? And I know it's a hard one to answer because it feels like we can beat anyone, but what do you look for there?
So I'm going to do at Florida Basketball Hour, we have a Patreon that I will plug, patreon.com/FloridaBBHour. I'm going to do something on the 7, 8, 9, and 10 seeds. So I've been looking at them. I honestly don't think there's an 8 or 9 that can beat any one seed in this field. I just think the one seeds are generally that strong. But, you know, and I do think there's some matchup contingent teams. Like Arkansas, for example, it is a team that has to score in transition a lot. And so, like, if they play a team like Iowa that doesn't turn the ball over ever, like, it could be a short NCAA tournament for Arkansas, right? Florida, does a team force turnovers and can they compete with Florida on the glass? Those are the big kind of telltale markers. So like Tennessee in a normal year would be a team you'd be like, man, they could play with the Gators for 40, but they turn the ball over all the time and they don't force a lot of turnovers, right? So they meet one of the criteria because they can rebound with Florida very easily, but you know, they have the other problem. You have to be able to turn this Florida team over to win. I'm more convinced of that than ever based on the fact that the Gators are shooting 35% from three in their last 10.
Neil, I hate to skip past the SEC tournament and the first 2 weeks of the NCAA tournament. But fast forward to March 30th, you're sitting here as a guest on Breakfast with the Gators. Tell us why the Florida Gators are going back to the Final Four in Indianapolis, and then tell us why they're not going back to the Final Four this year.
So the knot is they have a high turnover, bad three-point shooting game in the second weekend. I don't think, you know, and maybe I'll end up looking like an idiot and the epilogue of my book will be pretty sad and like something bad will happen in the second round. I don't see it. Just every like piece of data and every eye test, because we're not just stat nerds. Like we watch the games. I don't think it happens to them in Tampa, Florida. Right. But I could see something on the second weekend where they have a high turnover game and they also don't shoot the ball well. And like, maybe they get into a hole and they can't climb out of it. You know, cause I don't think they're, I think it's all, we all would agree. They're not built to play from behind the way last year's team could. Without Walt, Elijah, and Will to rain shots. That said, like, I do think Florida is more matchup proof. I've said this on the podcast than they were last year. I think last year Florida didn't guard actions as well. I think this Florida team guards actions really well. So a team like UConn that scores a ton off actions was a real problem for Florida. And as soon as the bracket came out, like Eric Fawcett and I were like, man, that's going to be a dogfight. And it was. This Florida team can guard a bunch of actions. Every guy on the floor guards well, including Xavier Lee. Zay Brown can negate your mismatch nightmare. Like the way they defend and then the way they rebound, they're historically good in that respect. They're the second team since 1940 pre-integration. That's for you, Jackson. They're the second team since 1947. Since after World War II, that's top 10 in offensive and defensive rebounding percentage. Top five. So it's staggering how good they board. It's amazing how well they're defending. And right now they're hitting shots. They're wagging, boys.
They are. You talk about, I know you had a hard out at 8:30, but last question before we got to let you go. You talked about 35% from three of the last 10 games. We shot like 26 or 28% the first 2 months. What's been the difference? Is it just kind of the shot style, or, you know, Boogie Flam more catch and shoot, Xavier off the dribble? What do you kind of see that's kind of up those numbers a little bit?
Klavzar.
Yeah,
Klavzar's gotten loose, right? The bad news is the defenses in the SEC aren't as good, right?
Good news, Condon's not 0 for 6 every night anymore.
Yeah. The only bad data point is the SEC defenses are like fourth in the Power 5. The SEC offenses are far and away the best in the Power 5, which should tell you something about Florida's defense. But, yeah, I mean, I think Klavzar forces teams to pay attention to spacing a little bit. They can't sag the paint when he's on the floor. And then Lee – you know, when Todd Golden says he's been brilliant for a month, he has. And it's not just like the fact that he made a few threes has changed the way teams have to guard Florida, because now they have to respect that a little bit more. And what we've learned about Xavier is how good he is off the dribble getting downhill. And that layup has become pretty automatic. And that's a comfort thing, too. It's not just shot diet. It's like Xavier knows how Alex and Micah and Ruben seal now, right? He knows what to look for when they set those down screens, and that makes it easier for him to finish at the basket. So I think it's kind of both those things. And so Florida's spacing isn't as wonky. and they're really good. And then, oh, by the way, they have an All-American that, you know, we hadn't even mentioned, and I think I've been on for 25 minutes.
That's because the lasting memory everybody has of him right now is missing dunks. What the heck's going on with that?
We asked him if he got a lot of grief for that, and he said that's like the most text messages he's got since they won the national championship.
They only show up whenever they're there to hate. They never give you the praise you deserve.
Totally. It's like, dude, the guy went for 22-9 and was like plus 25 at Rupp Arena. Let's hate on him for missing a dunk.
You did mention how teams are kind of, I know you have a hard out real quick, but kind of guarding Urban Clavijar differently. I think you could see that with Kentucky. They were really keying in on him, and it kind of opened things up a little bit for Condon and Ruben there. He held Urban to 3 points, but kind of got blown out for the most of the game. So pick your poison, really.
Yeah, I mean, get used to it. And Herb has gotten better at, you know, okay, I'll attack the paint too. And, you know, he's a strong kid. So, a wagon. Looking forward to Friday, guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Let everyone know where they can follow you, subscribe, your Patreon. Where can they find
you? Yeah, thanks. Definitely patreon.com/FloridaBBHour is the best way to support the podcast. Florida Basketball Hour, pretty much wherever you stream. I'm at NW Blackman on whatever, X, wherever, whatever you want to do. I don't Blue Sky, but everywhere else. All right, y'all.
Appreciate it, Neil. Have a good night.
Thanks, guys.
You're the man, Neil.
That was awesome. Great. I can definitely attest to, I think I've mentioned before, I've listened to the podcast for 7 or 8 years, and him and Eric do a great job, and they definitely make you a smarter basketball fan. So I think it's like $5 or $6 a month for the Patreon, and it is well worth it just to kind of see Eric's film reviews and sort of hear his breakdown of things Florida does well, things they could do well, things Florida does really well defensively against other teams. He was first on the bandwagon talking about how great Boogie Flan's defense was when Boogie, you know, was an absolute zero offensively. So definitely check those guys out.
That was fantastic. There was a couple of points that he made. The first one about this being a team that isn't as built to come from behind as last year's team was. And you think about that not being our strength. But then you also realize that we came back from down 17 points and took a lead in the last minute in Cameron Indoor. So if that's not a strength of this year's team, goodness gracious, how good is this year's team? And the other one
against Auburn too.
Yeah. And the other thing was about Xavier Lee getting used to our bigs and the way they seal. That was one of my biggest complaints early on with Lee and with Boogie, was you would see Condon, Ruben, Mike is really good at it too. They would seal off the lane and the guards just not see it. And that's something, even with lobs that, you know, the one big is sealing another. We have another big that goes up and has a wide open lob. And that's something that these guys are starting to see so much better. And you can just see the ascension from January to today. It's time to go do it, guys, because this is the best ball they've played all year.
I found the SEC stat interesting. It's not one I was aware of. Specifically, the offensive efficiency of the SEC as a league being well above everyone else. It, like he said, it says a lot about the defense we played. It also says a lot about the offense we played. It makes it that much more impressive. It will be interesting to see how defenses handle us. I think he mentioned what SEC was fourth on the defensive side of things. It'll be interesting to see how we fare. Tend to think pretty well.
I'd like to say some of us were patient with the backcourt of Boogie and Xavier, of just getting game minutes with our bigs. It's obviously, we saw it in our first 9 games, even saw it a little bit during the bye games, the start of league play. But now with those boys figuring out 11 straight in the regular season.
Well, it's real easy to talk about patience now. I mean, we were 5-4 and had lost to every good team we'd played, including TCU, who overachieved this season and is easily going to make the tournament. But I don't think we were wrong for having some concerns. We weren't not patient. We were just a little concerned.
I think the staff, they may not admit it. I think the staff was concerned. I mean, if they're telling the truth, I think there was probably some concern. These two new guards coming in, especially Lee early on, that there was some issues, and then hopefully it was going to be fixed, but they didn't know. And they have, but salute the patience, Mr. JR.
Notably a patient guy.
Well, anything else to touch on regarding Neil? As always, just a pleasure listening to him. He's very tuned into the program, great insight, very knowledgeable, does it all. So make sure you guys are following him on Twitter, Spotify. I don't think they have a YouTube page, but.
Well, I guess I can jump in before we wrap up with another edition of Devin's Baseball Minute. The Florida Gators had Florida State come into town last night, struck out 18 Noles, beat FSU 6-3. Little tough coaching may be necessary to get the boys throwing strikes again, but by the end of the game, they settled in, stopped walking guys, stopped giving away free bases, and it's always fun to beat FSU. We're moving on from the High Point weekend. No need to rehash it. We're on to South Carolina and a big SEC opening weekend.
Question from the floor for Coach Dev.
We might not have time for questions, but go ahead.
I know you mentioned we're moving on from the High Point weekend, but is that a case of tough coaching where it might just be best to flush it and move on, or were there things you could take from that series? I'll hang up and listen.
We'll flush it and move on. Thank you. Next question.
Glad to beat the Noles.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We're in Jacksonville in 2 weeks. I expect most of you to be in attendance.
Oh, yeah. Big weekend this weekend against South Carolina, though. I think we're in Columbia. I'm looking to see if this team can get off to a better than 1-11 start in conference play.
Well, if they can't go up there and sweep South Carolina, we have a lot of problems on our hands.
Yes, South Carolina's 12-6. I think they lost their midweek game yesterday.
They've lost almost every midweek game, it feels like, since the start of the season.
Well, that means that their starters on the weekend must be playing better than 12-6 isn't the worst record in the world. And it's a road SEC baseball series. Like you go in, win two out of three, you're in good shape. Win two out of three every weekend, and you'll be where you want to be by the end of the season.
Yep.
Throw strikes. That's what I'm looking for. Just throw strikes. The walks are what drive me insane.
Well, anything else, fellas? Gators play 1:00 Friday. We'll take on the winner, Kentucky, Missouri. It tips off by the time most of you listen today, Thursday at 12:30. So most of you have your iPads, laptops open at the office, do a little bit of scouting before the Gators take on either the Cats or Tigers in Nashville.
That's not the Will Norris I know. He's going to be locked in getting the ball
out. Listen, somebody's got to hate watch these teams. It might as well be me.
We got a few live tweets in there at 1:00, and it'll be a perfect Thursday for Will.
As we're wrapping up today, Texas is down by 11 with 9 minutes left to Ole Miss. That would be a rough loss for the Horns, who I think are a projected 11 seed coming into today.
Yeah, JR, you can throw all the shots you want about my Twitter, but what kind of Gator Twitter member would I be if I just let a chance to troll Kentucky go by? Just because it's 1 p.m. on a Wednesday. I mean, come on.
I got an out on Friday. I got a tea time Friday morning, so I will be home in time to watch the Gators, fortunately.
That's right. We forgot that your job just consists of a lot of whining and dining on the golf course, apparently.
Rough life.
It's 80 degrees in March. What else are you supposed to do?
Definitely not be in the office billing hours, that's for sure.
All right, we appreciate everybody listening. Again, make sure you're following us on Twitter at BreakfastWTG. Subscribe to us on Spotify, YouTube, Apple at Breakfast with the Gators. We'll catch you Sunday, live show. Should have mentioned this earlier. We'll have a live show Sunday for those still listening. Former Florida Gator guard/forward Matt Walsh will be joining us. So make sure you're tuned in. Set your notifications on Twitter. I don't know how to live stream from Twitter also on here. We're going to figure out before Sunday night. Make sure you're tuned in. Go Gators.
Go Gators.